This is a live episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 podcast network podcast, which means that we are one of many podcasts over at 1517legacy.com/podcast. Over there, you can find podcasts about all sorts of things. The Old Testament, apologetics, history, culture, all of them, with the goal of pointing you to Christ and Him crucified for you. Check that stuff out. This is obviously going to be different because it's live. And if you guys, how many people here have listened to 30 Minutes in the New Testament?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes.
Yeah. Show of hands doesn't translate as well as
cheering. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you say, I see that hand.
Yeah, it's a good. Yeah, I see that hand. I see that hand. I see that hand. That's good. We decided that we would. So you might know that we're in the book of Acts right now. So we have decided that we would take an excursion and do something different just for this. So we are going. So we decided to do. Me and Eric actually just finished a book together on parables, which will be out in September. So we decided that we would do a parable unique to Luke, a parable you've probably never heard of.
No, it's totally new to you. It's known as the parable of the Good Samaritan. Is that familiar?
Does anyone know about that? Yeah. Yeah. So we're gonna go Good Samaritan, and hopefully we
can. We totally stumped him, Dan.
I know, it's good. Yeah. So we're gonna talk about that. Eric, what do you want to just jump in and read the text?
We can, yeah. But I want to mention to the people listening to this later that the reason we are here, we are at beautiful Mabel Murphy's, is because we are here celebrating the Biennial Convention of the Church of the Lutheran Brethren and just having a good old time, and figured we'd take the occasion to record this podcast. So that's what brings us to this live event right now.
That's right. Correct.
Yeah. So we are in Luke chapter 10, verse 25. There is a ton to go over. I hope we have enough time in 30 minutes to go through this. Begins, "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put Jesus to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?'" And I guess we just have to stop right there, right at the beginning. What's the issue here, Dan? Who's the lawyer? And what's wrong with his question?
By lawyer, it doesn't mean that like an attorney, like a criminal lawyer, is asking this. Lawyers it's a word for a master of the law, and in this case, it's a guy that knows the law of Moses or the law of the people of Israel. So you have this guy standing up, and he's putting him to the test, which is a bad idea to put Jesus to the test. And he's asking him, "What shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And essentially what you'll see like over and over again throughout the Gospels is that they're always trying to trap Jesus with the law. Mm-hmm. They're always trying to, the accusation is always that he's not preaching a salvation that is just merely good news, but that he's actually actively preaching against the law. So they don't hear the message of Christ, the message of forgiveness, as this thing that's good news and is deliverance. What they hear, and what you will hear, what people will hear all a lot, when you preach like a pure 200 proof unadulterated gospel, they will not hear you preaching salvation by grace. They'll hear you preaching against the law. And so which of course he's not doing, but that's how it's heard. And so the purpose of this question is to get him to say something against the law of Moses.
Yeah, they're always trying to trap him. And this is essentially a Jewish theologian. This guy is an expert in the law of Moses. And so Jesus responds in good sort of rabbinical style, saying to him, "What is written in the law?" He responds with a question to his question. "How do you read it?" And the lawyer answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you'll live." Done and done.
Sounds easy enough.
Yeah, simple enough. Just love God perfectly and your neighbor perfectly, and you're all good. And of course, that doesn't quite sit well with this lawyer, because it says right afterwards, "But he, desiring to justify himself," same word that Paul uses for justify all throughout the book of Romans, the word that we use to talk about justification. That's what the lawyer is looking to save himself from, the trap that he knows has been just set for him. And so he says, looking for a loophole. And, who is my neighbor? What does that mean? Now, There's a good reason he asked this question, by the way. There is. Because in the Judaism of the time, the word neighbor had been redefined in such a way by the religious leaders to mean basically, well, if you're Jewish, you're my neighbor. Also, if you're not a tax collector, if you're not a prostitute, if you're not a leper, you're my neighbor. But other than that, you don't count as neighbor. So this is the context that the lawyer is coming from. Like he is trying to get Jesus to sort of narrow down the terms. He wants to make the law attainable. He wants to make the law something that can fit into what he already does. And I have to believe that maybe what's going on here is that the lawyers probably heard some of Jesus' teachings on this issue. You know, like in the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus directly contradicts that current teaching by saying, indeed, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemy. Or maybe he's heard that Jesus is healing lepers and accepting prostitutes to be a part of his ragtag group of followers. Or maybe he's heard that there's a guy named Matthew with him that used to be a tax collector. All of these people that in his mind as a lawyer would have been seen as very unneighborly, to say the least. And so that's probably going on behind the scenes with his question. And so Jesus replied with the parable. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. A couple of words about the path that this guy walked on. It was actually well known. It was 17 miles long and descended pretty sharply, about 2,500 feet above sea level to 770 feet below sea level. So it was a pretty steep path all the way down. It was actually known as the Bloody Path. And so David Wenham actually sets the scene in his commentary. He mentions that actually in the 12th century, the Crusader Order of Templars was founded to protect pilgrims traveling that road. And actually, even in the 19th century, pilgrims were given an escort of Turkish soldiers for the journey. So this was a well-known road and a dangerous road. People knew this to be a place that you probably didn't want to go. This was the wrong side of town. And so they would have known the path that Jesus is speaking about. The lawyer certainly would have known that. And then it says, now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. How do you think the guy felt, Dan, when like out of the corner of his beaten down, barely visible sight, he sees a man dressed as a priest walking there?
It's not an accident that Jesus uses priest and Levi, because these are two people whose job it is to help people. I mean, they're the pastors of the day. They're the intercessors of the day.
Right.
There's a way to rethink all of this, but you'll have to keep reading you have to get the whole thing out, and then I'm just going to blow the whole thing up and like rethink the whole thing.
I like that idea. That's a good idea.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rethink the whole thing, guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing that that's the word that is common here, if you go to verse 32 again, so likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him pass by on the other side. The thing that's common about both the priest and the Levite is Jesus makes it clear that they saw him. Like their eyes did indeed see the man. Mm-hmm. Any theories as to why they saw him and didn't stop?
Well, there's a bunch of reasons I'll start rethinking right now. You're like, he's forcing me to rethink the whole thing. I want to get the whole thing and then be like, it's not what you thought and it was going to be epic. I'll do something now. So, part of the reason, if you think about this in your real life, if you say you walk out of a restaurant and you like there's a dude laying on the sidewalk, like beat half to death, bleeding out, like the idea that you would not do something about that, like call the police, check a pulse, do CPR, whatever. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy if you're an atheist, if you're a Christian. That's absolute nonsense. Like, think, anybody, if you walk out of this restaurant and there's a dude beat half to death in this parking lot, not one of you is like, no, that's not a thing you do. Like, you're gonna be like, what the heck, and like, help, right? So that's one of the first things you have to think about with this. Like, this is actually fairly insane that this would happen. I mean, it's not like this is like going, like, the, you know, the good Christian thing to do when you run across a guy beat half to death is to help him. No, like, everybody would do that. This has to do with impurity. So that's part of it. But I don't think we're simply, and this is the thing that I don't think this parable is talking about. I don't think this parable is talking about a man actually taking a physical beating. Because again, anyone helps that guy. This is about something else. But we'll get there. Are you happy now? You happy now?
I'm happy.
All right.
Thanks, Dad.
All right, good.
So it says, but a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. And when he saw him, same word, saw him, he had compassion. Word means to have like a shared sense of suffering, empathy. He felt what the man was going through. It was like impossible for him to ignore this person that he saw on the side of the road. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, that he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise.
Okay, this is a good time to bring in background context. Now, that's so that if you flip back a chapter, if you flip back to Luke chapter 9, and one of what I think is one of the weirdest things in the Bible, in the Gospel of Luke, you will have this weird thing that happens where Jesus is going to Jerusalem and he wants to cut through Samaria, right? So he wants to cut through Samaria, and so chapter 9, starting in verse 51, it says, when the days drew near for him to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. So he's going there to die. And he sent messengers ahead of him who went and entered a certain village of the Samaritans to make preparations for him. But the people did not receive him because his face was set towards Jerusalem. So he's going to Jerusalem, and they're like, we're not exactly down with Jews. I don't know if you know that. No, you're not cutting through. You're not cutting through Samaria to get to Jerusalem. You have to go around. And when the disciples James and John saw it, they said, Lord, do you want us to tell fire to come down from heaven and consume them? That's crazy. Like, who do these guys think they are? They're like, all right, we were going to cut through Samaria. They were like, no, we don't like your master. Would you like us to rain fire down and kill them all? I feel like for sure that's how you know the disciples just like they totally don't get most things. And Jesus had to be like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Like, literally, no. Is. Like, no, you don't know what your spirit you're of.
No, we'll go the long way. Like, what are you talking about? But he turned and rebuked them, and they went on to another village. So here's the thing. So then the next chapter, you have this exchange happen with the parable of the, quote, good Samaritan, right? And so when this lawyer gets up and puts him to the test, Jesus is like, all right, here's what I'll do. I'll scandalize everyone listening. I'm going to scandalize this lawyer, and I'm about to totally scandalize my own followers I'm going to make the good guy, the hero of this story, the people who just rejected me. The people who just said, like, you can't come through our place. We don't want you here. You can't come through here. The people who my disciples just asked, can you just rain down fire and wipe this people out? And he's like, no, let me tell you a story. It's called The Good Samaritan. And the disciples had been like, what the? Yeah. Like, what in the world?
Right.
And so what you have this, like, what Jesus is trying to do here is scandalize everybody by making the least likely person the person that does the neighborly thing here. And this doesn't ring true to us, because when you if we hear Samaritan, like where I live, we have like like several different organizations with the word Samaritan in them. So like we have like the Samaritan's Purse, that's a good thing. We have the like, Samaritan's House, also a good thing. We have a Samaritan homeless shelter, that's a good thing. We have laws on the books that are like Good Samaritan laws, where like if somebody's like broken down on the side of the road and it's below zero, and you get in trouble if you don't help them because they might die. So if somebody
that's
was
a thing out here, by the way.
Yeah,
that exists here.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So nice. Yeah, so. So if somebody was to say to you, like, hey, man, you're a real Samaritan, you wouldn't be like, you want to fight? Like, it's not like this, like, insult. You'd be like, well, thank you. I do think I'm a pretty nice guy. That's not the case here.
No.
This is something totally different.
It's a dirty
different.
Word.
It's a bad deal. I mean, mm-hmm. In our religious, I mean, like, there's a lot of things. There's racial context in it as well, but just religiously speaking, the religious tension, I mean, it's almost like, you know, like, let me tell you a story. It's called The Good Muslim. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's like. Mm-hmm. And he totally scandalizes all of them with this story. But I do think that we're not, again, just talking about like, hey, guys, here's the deal. If you run across someone beat half to death in the street, you should help them. That would be really good. Because again, like, you don't need to be a Christian to do that. Like, anybody that is like just a semi-decent contributing member of society is going to do that. I mean, I know crack addicts that are going to do that, right? I mean, people barely functioning are going to do that. What I do think is he's using the Samaritan, the guy whose religion, and this is true, the Samaritan's religion was jacked up. Like, we see this when Jesus encounters a Samaritan woman. Like, their religion was wrong. Like, he doesn't, like, encounter her and say, like, oh, no, like, the way you're worshiping is totally fine. Like, all paths lead to God. Like, that's not what he does.
I like to think of him talking with that tone of voice.
That's how it's
like, oh, no, man.
That's my hippie Jesus voice. It's all good, man.
Yeah.
Your path, my path, we're all going to end it there. Like, all paths lead to the judgment seat, except for, like, through me, right? That's the one. But... So that's not, he didn't tell her that. He's like, no, you're worshiping on the wrong mountain. You got like all your stuff jacked, but I'm here, but I'm for you. I'm the one. And so it's not that they weren't, that everything wasn't messed up. So you do have this guy whose religion was like all jacked up. And he comes along and sees this guy. Now, like, here's where, I don't know, I'm going to spread the exegetical butter a little bit thin across this toast, but like, go with me, okay? What? What? Yeah. Okay. What?
Just
go with me. Like, we're gonna take a little trip. Think about this. So, this guy goes down from Jerusalem. Like, in Jerusalem's the place of God, and he's leaving. Like, he's going like the opposite direction of where he should go. He's leaving the place where God is, the city of God. He's leaving the church. He's leaving where it's safe to be, and he's doing this right. And he's going. And it says this in the text, you know, that he leaves and he's going down what Eric said, like a dangerous road. It's like a well-known dangerous path to go. A little bit, there's like, hey man, when you travel that path, this is what happens. Like, bad things happen outside Jerusalem. Bad things happen when you go down, right? And bad things do happen. One, I think the reason that these guys, that the priest and Levi, don't help. Is because I think this is more about this. Like, you don't know people, probably, that no matter how much you don't like them, that if they took a beating like that, you wouldn't help. But what you do know is people that are like, you feel like they are messed up their lives, that they've done the wrong things, that they got sin going on, and they're getting beat down by sin. Like, maybe, I don't know how many of you have seen the Luther movie, but I think this is like maybe Rethink the Robber, right? In the movie about Luther, I don't know when it came out in the 90s, I think, but there's this boy
that's the most handsome Luther ever.
Yeah, it's like sexy Luther.
Yes, yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're very generous.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Luther went on the keto diet for like and he got all ripped but South Beach Luther. But what happens in the movie, like, this young boy, like, hangs himself, and they won't bury him in the church graveyard because they didn't bury suicides there. He'd be buried outside the church. And Luther makes a statement. He, like, digs the grave himself, throws a kid in there, and I don't know how much of this is legit, but anyway, he says this really great statement where he says, This boy is no more to blame for the despair that overtook him than a man who is jumped by robbers in the woods. Think about, because it's just too easy. Like, I don't want to like light law you guys. Like, it's too easy to say if you walk out of this building and there's someone beat half to death, like, do something about it. Like, help them. Like, yes, obviously. What about like people in your life where like to help them is to get their blood and guts all over you? Like, what if like this guy's beat up? What if you have to like pick them up? You have to like take care of them. You have to like, you're gonna have their mess on you, right? Like, there was I think that the reason these guys don't want to help is because they know that this is like a serious investment. I mean, think about what the Good Samaritan does. He has to like oil. He has to put the medicine on. He has to put him on the horse. He has to take him to the inn. He has to do all these things.
Luther, yeah, and for weeks at the end, too.
Yeah, Luther talks about this parable about like, about taking taking beat up sinful souls to the inn of the church, like where they can be cared for. I'll tell you a quick story. I know I'm doing all the talking here, and I'm just let Eric like rip after this. But
I'm getting ready to rip.
Yeah, he's gonna rip. This is what I think of when I think about this parable, and like I hate to tell this story because like I'm not trying to make my I don't like telling stories where like I'm the hero, but sometimes I do heroic things. But in this particular story, it works because this was an accidental thing, like because like good work spontaneously burst forth. I one time rolled up. I was like the first person at like a horrific wreck, like head-on collision, and I was like it happened right before I got there. And so I had my family with me. I stop. I get out of the car. I go run to one of the trucks. That guy's dead. I go to the other truck. The gas dashboard's all caved in on this dude. He's like not responding. And like there's a girl in the passenger side that's just freaking out, like screaming, and like all the glass is bust out, and she's in a bathing suit because they were like coming from the lake or something, and she's like all cut up, and I'm a little bit freaked out because I can smell like all this gasoline, and she's like obviously in a state of panic. And so like I clear out, like I can't get the doors open, and so I clear out the glass on the passenger side windshield, and she's not like responding to me, she's just screaming. So I reached in and I grabbed her by her arms and pulled her out through this window and then carried her like 50 yards down the road away from the thing. And then I go back up to call 911, and they come and like everything, and like I do a report. All of that to say, like, it wasn't until like afterwards that I'm walking back up to the car to get in when they said I could go that I realized that I had this woman's blood like all over me. Like, I mean, I was just covered in somebody else's blood. It was all over my shirt, all over my face, all over, like when I had pulled her out, she like was clawing at me, and I was just covered in it. And I think that the reason the Good Samaritan or the priest and the Levite don't want to help this guy is because like when you run across people that are just like beat to death with sin and failure, beat to death with like the really icky stuff, not like the really bad stuff, and it's their own fault because they like went down that road, and they went down the road they weren't supposed to go, they got their head beat off, and like it's not my responsibility, and to help them means I'm gonna have to get covered in their stuff, and I'm gonna have to load them up and take them back to the inn of the church, and I'm gonna have to do this on my dime. This is gonna cost me something. And everyone's going to know it. Like, there was no way that I could have... I was on my way to a restaurant. There was no way that I could have went to the restaurant and everyone would have been like, that looks normal. Like, that, like nothing happened to that guy. No, it's obvious where you've been. Like, you've been on the scene of something horrific. And so I think that there's an element of this, like, if you apply it, where you can say, like, look, like, yeah, of course I would help some guy who, like, got beat up by... you know, by a gang in the street. Like, of course I would do something about that. But like, I know people who have been beat up by the gang of sin. I know that people have been beat up by the gang of their own bad decisions. And I know that to help them is going to be messy. I'm going to get it all over me. And it's actually going to cost me something. Like, it's going to be mercy on my dime.
And it may make you look bad to the rest of the world.
Yeah, you might be ritually unclean after that. Absolutely. Like, you're going to get some guilt by association kind of stuff going on there. And now I do want to say this, Eric. Now I'll pass it to you, because ultimately what this parable is about is this. Like, you are the guy that got like beat half to death, and the Good Samaritan is Jesus, who comes and on his own dime takes you into the church and takes care of you and says, I will come back for this person. That's what it's ultimately about. What it's ultimately about is you got beat half to death being somewhere you shouldn't be, and Jesus came along and put the salve and washed you with baptism and fed you, stuck you in the church, and says, I'll be back for this guy. It's all on me. That's what it's ultimately about. The only reason I'm even like bringing up like, hey, you know some people that have been beat up by sin and you should do the same thing to them, is because Jesus does in fact say, go and do likewise. But that's also why I'm saying this isn't just about a physical beatdown, because if this is ultimately about Christ, who found you dead in your trespasses and sins, took care of you, the go and do likewise is go find someone ravaged by sin and do likewise. Go be Christ to them, which is to go and preach this forgiveness of sins to them. And that actually is expensive. Like, love is not cheap. So, okay, now you can go. I'm done.
Apparently it's my turn to rip.
It's his now. Rip.
This is my turn.
Go.
And I think I don't have anything to really rip. I mean, that's, you know, you were pretty thorough, and that's good. I mean, this is a really there's a couple of
things. That's it. That's 30 minutes. Thanks for coming, guys.
Here, here. So I look at this from...
It's not fair. I wrote the chapter on the Good Samaritan.
He did. He wrote the chapter on the book. Yeah, but... So I just... One sort of side note. I mean, all of that is 100% true. But to sort of take this from the perspective of the person being beat up and not seeing people that can help you. I've had that experience before. I mean, when I was early in high school, I think freshman year, me and a couple friends were out... late at night, and it wasn't that late, and it was in a suburban community in California, so how dangerous could it be, really, you know? But we crossed the street. We just got done seeing a movie. We're going to go get some tacos, and we crossed the street to do that. And as soon as we crossed the street, we got into this parking lot, and almost instantly, we were surrounded by 9 large men, all wearing blue. Because this is back when, like, Crips and Bloods were a thing. I don't think they're a thing anymore. Although, if they are, I don't have any problem. Hey, it's fine. but this is back, I mean, back then. And they just sort of formed a half circle around me and my two friends. And we didn't have a clue what was going on. We're 14, 15-year-old boys. And one of them comes up, asks a question. Do we know this guy named Anthony? And my friend says, no. And then one of them rushes up out of the blue and just... busts him right across the face, and they all rush at us. Suddenly, 3 guys are on me. They're kicking me. They're punching me in the head. I'm down in the fetal position just trying to avoid, you know, dying. I literally look over on one side, and I see one of my friends. He gets picked up like this, and this dude was tall, picked up like this, like he's laying flat, and then just drops straight on his back onto the asphalt floor. I mean, so they were really beating us bad. And then I remember looking like in slow motion the other way, and it was the restaurant. And it wasn't just the restaurant, but it was people hanging out in the restaurant and out of the restaurant. The people out of the restaurant were just standing there watching. And I remember being stunned, because in the restaurant, there were people watching and eating. They were just watching and just like, oh, nope, it's a good taco. It's good entertainment. Watching that kid get beat up. And I remember feeling at the time like, this ain't right. Is there nobody here to help me? Is there nobody here that's willing, that can help me? And so when I think about this parable, and I think about it through the lenses that Dan just talked about, there's an awful lot of people that are looking at the church and expected the church to be maybe a place that would provide some help for them, and oftentimes have not gotten it. Too often, have not gotten a place that will say, we don't care what you've done to ravage your life. We are going to love you. Even if you make really destructive decisions, we are going to be relentless in loving you. Because that's what the church does. And why does the church do that? Because that's what its Lord does. That's what the head of the body does for you. And so that's the point of the Good Samaritan. Absolutely everything you said about Jesus really fulfilling the role of the Samaritan is 100% true. But the application is that yes, we're going to go out and we're going to be relentless in our love for those that have been beaten up by their sin and ravaged by life. We're not going to turn a blind eye to it.
I just want to say that I said that if I came upon you after the Crips had beat you, I would do something. I did not say that I would, like, while they
intervene?
Were beating you. Like, while they're beating you, I'm not doing anything.
You'd be eating up that taco.
I will eat the taco. But, like, they came upon him afterwards. So, like, the moral is, like, if you see, like, a bunch of guys getting beat down, like, you might hold back.
Yeah.
But, like, afterwards, be like, oh, bro, I'm so sorry. It's like that. Yeah. Okay, I will
Can
say
I offer you a taco?
Yeah, dude, yeah. I'll buy you a taco. And I will say this. We're, like, out of time now, but we can go along because it's live. I do like this. This is a total aside. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything we're doing. But I like this at the end of it where, like, so they, again, like, these guys do not like Samaritans. So there is this, like, really cool thing where Jesus, like, identifies. Jesus is the Samaritan in the, like, he's letting himself be played by, like, the rejected, despised person, which is great because he's going to be rejected and despised, and this is, so he doesn't mind identifying, letting the Samaritan play the good guy role, the redeeming role in this whole thing. But what is great is when Jesus says to him after he tells the story, he's like, hey, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among robbers? And, like, this lawyer's like, can't even say it. He's like, the one who showed him mercy? You mean the Samaritan? Is that who it was? Like the third one? Whoever the third one was? Yeah, that was the Samaritan. The Samaritan. Is that what you mean? Like, Jesus gives these people names for a reason. He doesn't say three guys. He says a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan, like on purpose. And when he asked which one it was, all the guy can say is like, oh, the one who did the thing. But he doesn't want to say the word. So it shows you that this guy is, I would say, rich young ruler style. I don't think this guy was, like, cut to the quick and was like, oh, you're right. Like, I've been I totally don't love my neighbor. Like, how now will I get to heaven? Can we have this conversation again?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the reason why there is, like, Jesus, you notice at the end of the parable or at the end of this interaction, he does not let up on the man.
No.
He actually gives him a word of law.
Mm-hmm.
You go and do likewise. He doesn't bring the word of the gospel to this man, and I think it's because in the response that the man gives, the man shows he hasn't gotten it yet. He has not been cut down. He's not willing to acknowledge his weakness and his need for help himself. He's not willing to see himself in the role of the dead person on the side of the road.
Yeah, well, the go and do likewise, too, like, I will say this, like, the go and do likewise is only possible when you realize that, like, the first part of this go and do likewise is the go and be found dead by Jesus and be taken to the inn and be brought back to life. And then when you are there and brought back to life, the fact that you were brought to the inn, that you were brought back to life, that you were nursed back to health on someone else's dime is the only way that you will ever go and do likewise to anybody else. You'll ever go and be Christ to anybody else. The first person that you have to realize in this story, you read this story and you're simply like, yeah, I'm about to go Good Samaritan this thing up. Okay, that was a different voice than the Jesus voice. Like, that's you. Jesus' voice was like, hey, and your voice is like, yeah. Like, it's different. But before you have any chance of being like, I'm about to go in Good Samaritan some sinners, you got to first be like, oh, praise God that I've been Good Samaritan by Christ, which will then produce in me any
even
ability.
Even though I've been the priest, even though I've been the Levite, even though I've been the dead guy on the side of the road.
You're like all the things.
You're the villains.
Like, you're all the things. Yeah, first you, like, yeah, you're the guy that doesn't help anyone. Then you're the guy that's found dead. Christ has to come and help you. And if you have any shot at ever, like, Good Samaritaning anybody, to being little Christ to anybody, you first come to the realization of, oh, man, I've priest and Levite did a bunch of people. And I've also been where I shouldn't have been found dead, been mercied and Good Samaritan by Christ, brought to the church. And now I'm going to go find some sinner that I can go be Christ to. And I'm going to go take care of him. And yeah, it'll probably cost me a little bit. But that's okay, because I've been given everything. I've been given everything I need, so.
And I think that's a good place to end, Dan. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for coming
out. Hang out. That's 38 minutes in the New Testament. All right.